Welcome to Stone and Redbeard, a podcast about movies. I am Stone.
And I am Redbeard.
And this is the week of January 1st, 2015, and we are going to be talking about movies.
Yes, we are. Welcome to the first episode. And we're going to do this by movie week, so we're going to start off with this being Monday, June 1st, first episode, and that's kind of how we're going to look at the week in general, since the box office reset on Monday morning, essentially. So we're going to start off today by laying the foundation for the show. Well, for instance, why you should listen to us. And we think the best way to do that is to give you a background on how we became avid film watchers and what kind of film watchers we are. And so we're going to start off with Stone.
All right. I am, as Ray here, a child of the 80s. So my movie premiere watching started in the 80s and 90s. 90s blockbuster movies. Love comedies. Action movies, dabble in anime. One thing about me is in 2000, I was in San Francisco, going to school up there. Realized that movie prices in the city of San Francisco were quite expensive. It was about $10 to go to a matinee screening. And from then on, I kind of vowed not to actually see movies in the theater.
And, that was 15 years ago.
A long time ago. And now we don't think anything of it. Yeah. But 15 years ago when I was a starving college student, $10 to go to a movie was expensive. So I would go to Fry's or Best Buy at the time, and always go there on Tuesday when DVDs and Blu-rays got released, and could never walk out of there with buying a couple of the newest releases, because then I could watch it whenever I wanted. So I didn't really start going back to the theater until 2010, I would say. And sad that it took that long to go back to it, because there's definitely some films I feel need to be seen in theaters, need to be seen on the big screen. And that's a little bit about me. Ray?
All right. Well, I'm also a child of the 80s. I spent a tremendous amount of time watching movies when I was a kid. My dad owned a lot of VHS tapes, and he would record a lot of movies off of television. And so I spent a lot of time fast-forwarding through commercials and re-watching movies, just like a... like an asshole, just rewatch movies like crazy. I would watch a movie like The Last Dragon, the Barry Gordy Motown Kung Fu film, and I would watch a movie like that, and then I would put it in the VHS tape rewinder that looked like a 57 Chevy Bel Air, and every time you dropped a tape into it and closed it, the headlights would light up and it made a little revving engine. And I'd rewind the movie, and I would throw it right back into the VCR. Because you had to remember, with VHS, you couldn't just hit rewind, as my dad would say, because you'd wear down the heads on the machine. So you had to have a separate rewinder, because I did a lot of rewinding. So I watched a lot of films like that growing up, and then I just stayed interested in movies. I followed them. I read a lot of magazines. I read a lot online as the internet became more of a thing. And then I spent like 2 years what I call drudge work. And I spent that time going to movies because, I was in a relationship that was failing, and we spent a lot of time apart from each other, and I spent a lot of time learning to see movies by myself. And when I did that, it opened up new doors, and I went and saw pretty much every movie I wanted to see, whether it had a lot of buzz to it or not. And I ended up seeing a tremendous amount of films. I was going to see at least a film a week, sometimes two, depending on the season of the year. And I remember that after a couple of years of doing that, there was just overall not a lot of great movies out there. It was like maybe 10%, and then a big chunk that was just kind of okay, and then like 20 or 30% that were just simply the worst movies that you could have seen, that like just total waste of your time, probably took something from your life to have seen them at all.
Soul-sucking,
yes. I think that's how I described it before. And so I just found that you can't do that, but I learned a lot of lessons along that path. I learned how to pick the right kinds of movies, what kind of information was important to me when I wanted to go see it. And I also spent a lot of time at Blockbuster. I was one of those guys who had this like Blockbuster membership where they try to do online, and I would get the movies from online, they'd mail it to me, and then I'd go trade it in and go rent a movie from the store and then turn back around and trade that in and get a movie online. And oh man, I was a Blockbuster fiend. And so my specialties are more from the 80s on. I followed film pretty religiously, but more of a 90s and on is really my strength. And directors. I follow a tremendous amount of directors. Now directors are very popular in America, and I use them as a pretty interesting tool of how to pick the right kind of movie. So something we should explain about this show, you know, we don't really have like a twist or anything like that. We just like to talk about movies, but we're each going to be doing something. I can't really drink a lot of alcohol, and Stone can't drink. He drinks a lot of alcohol, but he doesn't smoke weed. So we decided that I'm going to smoke a lot of weed and he's going to drink a lot of alcohol, and we're going to talk about movies doing that. It's going to be fun. It might ramble on. We might try and touch you on occasion, but either way, it's going to be a good time. So just if you hear, you know, like that sound, it's not methamphetamine. I just use it to light my marijuana on fire. And every once in a while you might hear some grumbles from the background. We're in my apartment where my grandma lives and, my cat. So welcome. So we're gonna move on to the next segment. We want to talk about how we rate films. We both sat down and decided that we should come up with a system that makes sense so that you can understand what we're talking about and why we feel the way that we feel about certain movies. So we broke it down in a letter grade system, and we basically say that there's a lot of flexibility within the letters depending on the individual. For me personally, any film that's an A+, it may not be a film that a lot of other people could watch. It's a very personal film. It's a desert island movie. It's a movie that I can watch over and over again and not get tired of. But there's a lot of solid A and A- movies out there, a lot of solid B movies out there, not like the traditional B movie sense, but a movie that would get graded a B, right? And then there's a tremendous amount of C movies out there. Unfortunately, it's hard to come up with examples of that because we don't trend to go see C movies anymore. It's very rare, you know, or buy them because we're pretty good at picking the movies that we like.
Yeah.
There's also anything less than a C. So I would say C+ is like the lowest film rating I could give to where I would say that it's even barely watchable. If I'm saying anything below that, it's going to get pretty harsh. So we're going to give you some examples now on what we think are those types of movies, and that might show a little bit of our personality. But then, now, we've only got a couple of selections for most of these, and some of them even just like one. They may not reflect a ton of personality as far as the film watchers that we are, but you'll come to learn that hopefully if you stay tuned and listen to the show. So,
yeah.
Starting with Stone, I'm going to light this joint while he tells you.
So, A movies wasn't very hard. I have a ton of A movies. Pretty much almost everything in my DVD collection is an A movie. DVD/Blu-ray, I should say, which is quite extensive. But I had to pick a couple classics right off the start. Ghostbusters, very prevalent right now, just because I just built the Lego Ecto-1, so
that was
pretty awesome. Like I said, I dabble in anime, so Princess Mononoke is up there, one of my favorite Miyazaki films. Those are kind of in the A range, but it's movies that I definitely could see over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the movie that it comes on TBS and you sit there and you watch it.
Yeah.
With the commercials, even though you own it in the next room.
Yeah.
You're just too lazy to go get get the copy and put it in. You'll still sit through the commercials.
Oh, yeah.
B movie, I kind of had a little talk before we started recording about this. It's something that was a good movie, but you don't necessarily ever want to see it again or have to see it again. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's a lot of good dramas. You know, or twist movies, because everything's building up towards the twist, and then it's over, and you're like, well, that was cool, but, you know.
But it's gone.
Yeah, like, The Queen would be a good drama that would fall into that range.
Absolutely.
For me, and then a twist movie would be, like, The Sixth Sense.
Mm.
Like, great movie,
yeah.
The great twist, like, if it didn't get spoiled for you, which a lot of people spoiled that movie for a lot of people, but, you know, it wasn't ever, don't ever want to see either one of them again, really, because there's no need to, really.
Yeah.
C movie was my hardest category to find a movie, just because, like Ray said, we're pretty good about knowing what kind of movie is going to hit our taste buds, so to speak, and we tend to stay away from movies that we're not going to like to begin with. For me, Lone Ranger was one of those.
Poor Armie Hammer. Can I just say that?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely could tell Disney was just hitting on the star that is Johnny Depp and that he could sell anything, and it just didn't work. I mean, it failed on so many levels.
Well, hold on a second. Grandma, how'd you feel about Lone Ranger?
I loved it.
She loved it.
I also like Johnny Depp.
She's a big fan of Johnny Depp.
I love Johnny Depp, too, but
But
Lone Ranger was
pretty bad. No, it was not my favorite. I did not care for it, so it was weird for me.
Yeah. Now, lower than a C is something that I've only walked out of the theater once in my entire life. Because usually when you go to the theater, like I said, I stopped going for 10 years just because of the value of it. Mm-hmm. You know, House on the Haunted Hill was a movie I walked out of the theater. It was about 30 minutes in, and I just had enough. Oh. I'm like, nope, this is awful. But I'm not a huge horror fan either. Mm. You know, my horror films kind of stayed in the Freddy Jason era, the 80s horror, and, you know, the new gore of Saws, and just never appealed to me.
Yeah.
And then another bad example would have to be Spider-Man 3. I thought that movie was awful. I love Sam Raimi. Huge Evil Dead fan, mm-hmm. Army of Darkness. I'm glad to see they're doing another Army of Darkness.
Yeah, and is it Bruce Campbell that's in it too?
Bruce Campbell's in it again. Yeah, that'll be so, you know, I'm excited for that, but Spider-Man 3, they should have just changed the name to Paycheck. You know?
Yes, absolutely.
That literally was all he was doing, because that movie was awful.
And he admits it now. He knows, he'll say it, that was a mistake. But he doesn't necessarily take all that responsibility for it, I feel like. When I've read stuff about it, it's almost like, the studio sucks.
And that's blatantly obviously now with Sony accepting Marvel's help to do the next Spider-Man franchise. But we'll probably talk about that later. We're not going to hit on much movie news this week just because we are in an intro show.
We are.
But we wanted you guys to get to know us a little bit. So I'll move on to Ray and his examples of what he would give letter grades. And
oh, yeah, that's me. I'm also known as Ray. And we're going to probably do that a lot, too. Yeah. So just so you know, there aren't four people here. My name is Ray, and also Redbeard.
Yeah.
And then Chris Stone.
And Stone is my last name. Yes. Redbeard's probably one of the greatest
Redbeard's
last names
ever. Not my last name, and he's got the cool last name, this guy. All right. So for my examples, for me, an A movie, there's a lot of variation there. I would say an A+, like I said, you know, every year I used to do a top 10, and, I still kind of do it mentally in my head as I go now, but there was a time where I was super serious about it. I'd write this full-on massive blog, and I could have turned it into Entertainment Weekly. It was so weird. I'd put pictures in it and MySpace. What a weird thing. Anyways.
You were doing Tumblr before Tumblr.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing, and then by the time Tumblr came out, I was kind of bored with that shit. I needed to move on. Yeah, so anyways, I am probably going to forget what I'm saying a lot, so bear with me. I got really into the top 10 thing for a while, and for about 4 or 5 years, I kept a pretty solid record of my top 10. And I would always find that the number one movie was very rarely going to be a film that I could sell across the board, that I could go to anybody and say, watch this movie, you're going to love it, and that they would agree with me. Mm-hmm. So that has shown me that your top film, in a lot of ways, depending on it, you're going to find people who agree with you. But overall, it's a very personal choice. Number 2 to number 10, I can say, these were all great films, and these were my top 10, and I highly recommend them. I highly recommend them all. But number 1 is going to be one you're not going to be sure about. And that's how I feel about the A+. For me, A+ films are inherently rewatchable, but it's not a film that I can recommend to everybody. Like, Joe versus Volcano, for example, but I'll talk about that one next week, I think. But a perfect example for me of an A+ film is Shawshank Redemption. It was a sleeper hit at the time, and gradually over time it's just become a modern film classic, I think. And great story, great acting, great directing, everything about that movie is pitch perfect, and that is definitely a movie that no matter what, if I'm at the car mechanic and it's playing on TNT on some little TV stuffed in the corner and I gotta sit and drink bad coffee to watch it, I'll stay there. My car could be ready and I'd want to finish the movie. I'd be pissed that I couldn't finish it. It's a great film. So, a more recent example, I would say, of an A film for me was Whiplash. J.K. Simmons won a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for it. Off the top of my head, I'm sorry, I can't remember the kid's name who was in the lead, but doesn't matter. Go watch it, and you'll learn. It's about a movie about a drum major who gets into a music conservatory program, and J.K. Simmons plays this hard-ass jazz instructor. But what's amazing about it is it's the best analogy I've seen for grad school in a long time, and it really, immediately as I was watching it, it was maybe halfway through I realized this is probably the best movie I've seen this year, if not one of the top two or three, as far as 2014 was concerned. Now, that's an A movie right off the bat. an A-minus movie, I don't have an example off the top of my head, but an A-minus movie is going to be like a little, it's just going to be like, yeah, that was good, that was really good, I really liked it, but it wasn't like my spine was tingling. And then from there, Bs, there's some variation, you know, it just kind of goes with how I feel. A good example of a B movie for me is Lone Survivor, because it was an interesting movie, and it was well made, and exciting, intense. But it was super fucking depressing and just gory. Like, I like gore. I'm the guy who in an action film is laughing, you know, when there's all these crazy fight scenes and gore and snapping necks and whatever. But sometimes, it's like, Jesus. Is there that much blood in a person? And you watch these guys who go through all this shit for, like, the last 36 hours of their life, you know? And it just... it was kind of overwhelming for me, and a movie that, while I appreciate the craft that went into making it, is just not a movie I think I'll ever need to see again. Another example would be Imitation Game about Alan Turing. I thought, you know, this is a good movie. Well acted. But ultimately, there was something missing that keeps it from being quite an A. Now, if I'm going to get to a C level, like I said, for me personally, C+ is like, that's as far as I want to talk about Cs. And I could say a good example of that would be the sequel to Transformers. I think it was called Dark of the Moon.
Dark Side of the Moon, yeah.
No, I think they just called it Dark of the Moon. Dark of the Moon? Dark Side of the Moon is the Pink Floyd album. Floyd, yeah. And they always have the worst subtitles for those. But, you know, the second one, it wasn't horrible. The special effects were good. It was too long. They added too much. The little, like...
No, second one was Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh, Revenge of the Fallen. Dark of the Moon was the third one. Yeah. Okay, okay. Now...
just keep you on topic.
The second one... I remember watching it, and there's a scene where there's like those crazy Transformers are climbing up the pyramids towards end, and I'm just like, this is so fucking ridiculous.
One of them is an SR-71 Blackbird.
Right! Like, it was just so over the top. And so I just found that for me personally, I'm not interested in any more Transformer films, and yet for some reason I kept going back to see them. The third one came out, and I thought, well, the second one was all right. It'll be a good summer flick. There's a perfect example of a less-than-C film for me. The third one, to be honest with you, I don't remember much about it except for thinking, towards the end, this is the worst movie I've seen in a long time, and they're just tearing apart this city at the end, and there's, like, no hope for humanity and blah, blah, blah. And I just remember thinking, like, Josh Duhamel, go make other movies. Stop this madness. This is ridiculous. And then they came out with the fourth one, and that's it. I'm done. That is an F movie for me. So that's how I break it down. We'd also like to talk about something called a viewing scale. We may not always mention this, but it's worth noting. So an example of the viewing scale would say, would you see a movie in the theater?
Yeah, which is a little different for the two of us, just because I go to the theater a little rarer than Ray does, obviously. Yeah. It takes a lot for me to get out to the theater. Obviously, starting this podcast, and me and Ray have talked about movies for the years that we've known each other. It's been our breath of topic, sitting there drinking and him smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But
and women.
Well, we were going to bring that up. I guess we can now. If I'm going to see him in the theater, I have to know that I'm going to like it almost. Yeah. Like, we put Pumped or Curious... I know Ray will probably see a couple more Curious movies. We have similar tastes, so it might be a movie that, you know, he goes and sees and he's like, oh my God, it was great.
Mm.
And I'm going to go check it out, even though I, you know, maybe beforehand had some...
reservations.
Yeah, reservations about seeing it myself. We were talking about one that just came out a couple weeks ago that you said it was great to go see it.
Oh, Mad Max?
Mad Max, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
And... I probably will see it now.
Mm-hmm. He actually saw some trippy stuff online. The before and after pictures, but you can slide across to see the special effects they added.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty amazing, actually, because when you're watching it, it's pretty flawless. It just looks like they filmed it in, like, a post-apocalyptic wasteland or in, like, some crazy part of Australia. Mm. But
so they actually did it a lot, because they
added a surprising amount of backdrop.
Oh, okay.
There'd still be a lot of special effects happening, but there'd be a lot of this...
A lot of the stunt work was done,
where they'd be working out in flat desert, and they would literally add up that it was in a canyon.
Oh, okay.
And you just don't even think that... You know what I mean? Like, you just think, that's a landscape, of course. Right. You know?
Yeah.
So, it's pretty fascinating the way they did it. But.
Yeah. So then we have, you know, see it in a theater. Obviously, those are going to be your big summer blockbuster movies. Avengers, Mad Max, we'll talk a little bit about the summer movies coming up later. Mm-hmm. Movies that you either go rent at Redbox, or for me, buy the Blu-ray or DVD, kind mm-hmm. of the same kind mm-hmm. of category. Like, you're going to own it, you're going to watch it a bunch.
Yep.
We have illegal download.
Yeah, if you rate something, let's be careful here. I don't download anything.
We don't recommend
I'm
that.
Actually not, I'm getting too old for that shit. I used my Napster and Kazaa accounts back in the day. I had some great times.
I forgot about Kazaa.
Yep, but it was mostly music and porn, I'm not going to lie. And I didn't download movies back then, and I've known people using Torrent for years to download, you know, I mean, I knew people that had like 10,000 movies in there. I mean, I lived in Oregon, I knew some really trashy people, but anyways, I'm just amazed, though, that people, you know, I love this film industry, and I'm probably going to get some shit for this, I don't know. If you illegally download, go for it, fine. I just make the choice not to, but it definitely fits as a category because it shows that you don't really, like, you wouldn't pay for it, obviously, because you're willing to risk jail time and hefty fines to download it. That's how much you disdain paying for it, so.
You're paying mega corporations that produce these movies, but, you know, it somehow gets back to the actors and the directors and the crew, like, it keeps them working, and I have no problem supporting them, you know. It's the same thing with, like, the music industry, downloading music. If you really want to stick it to them, you can use Spotify. I know music artists are pissed about Spotify.
Yes,
they get paid nothing for that.
And I fucking love it. Oh,
but, you know, it's an art. It costs money to create these things. So, not that I hate pirates, because I understand it, because, you know, some kids, their parents won't let them see certain movies, or, you know, you're in a region where that movie never came out, so you might need to watch it that way. So be it. But, you know, basically, don't illegal download unless you have to. Like, if there's no way for you to get it, then, okay, maybe.
Don't
but
not listen to
don't
our show because we feel this way either.
But then Netflix, you know. Netflix, you're going to watch a lot of movies that way. A lot of stuff that, you know, you're tired. You didn't have a chance to go to the theater for it. You want to sit there in your PJs with a gallon of ice cream or a pack of cookies or.
You sick fuck.
Whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Our last category.
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 Hey!
You know, like I said.
I'll take categories for 500, please.
Yes, Alex. We're going to call it In the Queue.
Yes.
A movie that you're going to put in your queue on Netflix, which you're never going to watch.
Never.
You're curious about it. It's got a guy you like or a girl you like in it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, as Ray Case, maybe you like the director, but it's just something you never get around to. It just sits there forever. And just eventually you just delete it.
And you kind of grow to hate that shit. It like, weighs on your soul. Because you put it there and you're like, yeah, I should watch that. And every time you want to go watch a movie, you're like, no, I don't want to watch that shit, though. But I feel like I should, because I promised Netflix. It's in my queue, Netflix. Hold on to it for me. And I'm just like, fuck you, Netflix. So, anyways, that's the viewing scale, if that made any sense.
Yeah, so I'll go real quick. In the theater, you're going to see it. You're pumped for it. Mm-hmm. You're going to go. Mm-hmm. You're curious about it. Maybe you poll some of your friends if they went and saw it, and you go based on their advice.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. See it in the theater. You know, Redbox / DVD buy / Blu-ray buy, depending on your, you know, income, I guess. Illegal downloads, which we do not support ourselves, but we understand certain situations.
Yep.
It's required.
Hey, do it. Yeah.
Netflix, Hulu Plus, those kind of viewing applications, highly recommend. You can see a lot more movies for a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, Netflix is, what, $8 a month right now? Mm-hmm. See a ton of movies. And stuff that you'll never think to watch, you know, you can watch on Netflix.
Right.
In the queue, our last category, something that you might want to see, but you never do.
Yep.
You know, documentaries might end up there. You know, you hear a great documentary.
I've always
wanted
to see Grizzly Man, for instance.
Yeah.
But
I've always heard
about
that
movie. I'm never going to watch it.
Never watched it either. Yeah. Great example there.
Okay.
In the queue. So,
I would add another piece to the would see it in the theater. Because there are definitely movies that we're going to talk about in a moment that I would say I'm going to wait for feedback on. I'm going to wait and see what some people think about it. I'm going to wait and see what the critics say about it to even decide whether, you know, that's kind of the curious side of it, but a little bit further than that. Like, okay, let's wait and see what other people are saying before we get too crazy on it.
Right. Okay.
And then I'm also going to say this. We should probably warn that there might be spoilers on this show because we may be inebriated at certain times. All right?
That's true. We might just plain out forget.
And to be honest with you, you know, Chris doesn't watch movies when they come out in theaters rarely. You know, he's going to wait till it comes out, which could be 3 to 6 months later, depending on how big of a film it was.
Right.
And then I don't always get to make it to the theaters. And so if I don't get to make it in the theaters, you know, like I was a Blockbuster kid. I lost track of how to get movies otherwise. I don't know how to use Redbox yet. I've never done it. So it's going to take me a while to see some movies too. So we're going to assume that unless it's a bit, like, I'm not going to tell you how Mad Max ends, even though I saw it, or I'm not going to blow the Avengers for you. But if we're going to give you a review, you might learn some things that you may not hear otherwise. I don't know. Just cover your ears sometimes if it's talking about something you don't like. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, spoilers will probably run rampant on this show. Like you said, it won't usually be new releases. It might be something that's a month or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in my case, you know, a year old or something. We're going to usually do a movie news kind of segment, kind of delve a little deeper into maybe a little bit behind the scenes stuff that, you know, maybe if you're not up on Twitter or, you know, blogs or, you know, reading Entertainment Weekly or, you know, any of those type of websites regularly, we'll try to keep you up to date on some of the things. Only real news of note this week that we just kind of want to briefly touch on, just because kind of debated this for an A movie for me and myself. Jaws, this year is its 40th anniversary. Mm-hmm. They are re-releasing it in theaters to make a little more money off off the film. So, you know, they're re-releasing in the theaters this summer. If you haven't seen it, I can't recommend it enough. I mean, it definitely wasn't classic. The film that Spielberg intended it to be, but based on some malfunctions of Bruce the Shark, it turned into a film that is praised as one of the greatest of all time for some of the shots that he created and just great acting. But just the suspense that he was able to portray with the absence of the shark, but the fear of it being there at all times, just is remarkable.
And the characters too. I mean, the acting is worth mentioning, but the writing was great as well. And it's really interesting because the author of the Jaws book, he pretty much only wrote like huge animal disaster novels. So because he wrote like another book called Squid or something like that, I think, or some.
Did he?
Yeah, because that's all he wrote about was this kind of things. I feel like, and so anyways, that warning that could be absolute bullshit. I don't know. But I do remember that he had other like TV shows that were made. Like there was a giant squid TV show that was Robert Benchley's, like, you know, whatever.
No, I pretty much, you know, gone over his IMDb. We're gonna use that website a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
they're aquatic films, aren't they?
Jaws, The Deep, Jaws 2,
yes.
The Island,
yes.
Jaws of Revenge, Dolphin Cove.
Dolphins, this guy had, no!
This guy had an obsession with Jaws. Yeah.
What's the TV one?
TV movie, you have Cruel Jaws,
no.
You have The Beast.
The Beast, I think of that one.
And then they have Creature. Those are his TV movies.
Okay, alright. Well, anyways, that author, you know, I don't know if the writing came from that, or if it came from who wrote the script. And obviously, you know, Spielberg is a
great
director.
He was the book author. And there was a couple guys who wrote the screenplay. Peter Benchley and Carl Gottlieb. They were the screenplay. The novel was Peter Benchley.
Benchley. Oh,
Benchley.
That's Benchley.
Yeah,
Carl Gottlieb, let's see what else he's done. Now, Benchley, I guess, followed after Mario Puzo, the author of The Godfather, and did his own adaptation there.
Carl Gottlieb wrote The Jerk.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty.
Interesting. Caveman. Wow. Jaws 2. Jaws 3D. Oh.
Those are other C movies. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
C.
Yeah.
Bass.
Although,
C.
You know what?
The sequels.
C Bass. Is that what you said?
No. Beyonce. You know, the sequels. Not the Queen Bee.
Yeah.
Not the Queen Bee.
So, Jaws the Revenge, though, when I was a kid, I really dug. I think that was the one where they went back and it was like the woman was older.
Is this one of the theme park?
Older, like blonde, hot one. I don't remember. But I remember really liking it. And I fucking love Universal Studios. Oh my god. To go to Universal Studios.
Do the tour.
I don't care how many times I've done it, how cheesy it is, how run down it gets. I just love it. I gotta get back up there. Maybe I'll go late in the summer. So happy birthday, Jaws. Yep, Jaws is actually the film, I believe, that coined the term blockbuster. Like, they coined it based on that because
that was the first summer blockbuster.
Summer that people
usually a movie time back then.
Really? Yeah. And that was the first time that they had lines that were literally crossing, you know, they'd be around the block and have to go on to the next block. It's the blockbuster. Like, people are lining up so far, they'd be blocks away to get in the movie. Jaws was the movie that really brought people to theaters in that high of a number all at once. And so, yeah, excellent film. Like I said, great characters, great acting, great directing.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yeah.
All right, moving on. We're going to move on to what we're going to call the hot topic for this week. At this segment of the show, what's our running time right now?
We're about halfway through. A little over halfway. Ah. So this part will be the second half of the show.
Yeah, so mainly the format will be we'll talk about what's been going on as far as movie news, talk about any movies we've seen. We have a couple new segments that we'll feature every once in a while. Maybe we'll have some guests on here. And then for about the second half of the show, we'll get to a point where we do a hot topic. So whatever we chose to talk about for that week, this week it's the summer 2015 checkup, so summer already started. Summer starts earlier and earlier every year, it seems.
Yep.
Like. It used to start in, like, I swear, just June. I remember when they made a big deal about a summer movie opening in May, and I want to say that the first movie to do that was X-Men 2, X-Men United. I think, I don't remember, but it was around that time when superhero movies were starting to become something where people were, like, paying attention. It was past the days of Captain America and the Red Skull from the 90s and the Punisher with Dolph Lundgren and, you know, way past the times of the original Flash TV show, which I actually loved when I was a kid. But, you know, this was a time where comic book movies were becoming something far more viable than they had ever been before. And it suddenly became apparent that, well, why wait until June? The kids are getting out in May sometimes.
Yeah.
And fuck it. Why wait till they get out of anything? Let's just start making crazy movies and make the season bigger. And I swear they started moving. Captain America opened in April, didn't it? The sequel?
Well, X-Men 2, you're right, did open in May. The first weekend of May.
Yeah.
And the original X-Men, 3 years earlier, opened in July. So
yep.
It definitely moved them forward.
Yeah.
So you were asking about Captain America?
Yeah, the Winter Soldier, I think, opened in April.
It did, April 4th.
It did, and then it set a bunch of records, and it became a massive tentpole. Look what they're doing this summer. I mean, it's just crazy to think that it starts earlier. And now, it's like this year, May was here, and they're like, yep, right off the bat, let's get those movies coming.
Mm-hmm.
So for this show, we're going to talk about...
I mean, this year, the first, like, I guess you consider it a summer movie, is Fast Furious, or 7.
Oh, yeah, that
Furious
came out
7.
In April as well.
That was April. So, yep. I mean, that's your beginning
because,
of the...
Yeah,
they
know that they can put... It's like they put their, you know, a fine warrior out there first to face the hordes and to show their might. And that's really becoming the pattern now, it seems like. And so, we're not going to start looking at our summer. I still don't consider summer movies to start until May. I'm not going to start calling April summer. It's like the epitome of spring. There's fucking Easter bunnies laying eggs and shit.
Right.
All right. So, I'm gonna say that we're gonna stay firm on May 1st at least being the cutoff. And so for this year, we start off with the Avengers sequel, The Age of Ultron. And so this is where our perspective is going to differentiate a little bit, because I've seen it. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it yet.
Chris has not seen it. I've seen it, and there's going to be a lot of times where I'll probably see a movie in theaters that he hasn't seen yet, and he'll just have to catch up eventually. So my perspective may be one suggesting that I've seen it, while his would be one suggesting how he would feel about seeing it overall.
Right.
So for me, I saw The Avengers, Age of Ultron, and I give it a pretty solid B+. And I had to think about that a little bit. I really liked The Avengers, the first movie. And as we'll talk about next week, you know, I've generally been okay with the Marvel films so far. Overall, that you know, it is what it is. But The Avengers, I feel like, tied everything together really well. It was fun, creative, you know, funny in a lot of parts, and just the action was entertaining and over the top, but well done. And then I saw the sequel, and I just kind of thought, you know, it's starting to feel a little also-ran. It's starting to feel a little bit like this is why comic books don't tend to just run on forever. They have story arcs.
Yeah.
And this story arc is simply massive. And it makes me wonder if maybe it's just too much almost, you know? Now they're introducing new characters, and now it's like, I don't want to spoil anything, but they introduce a new character in this film that you may not expect if you've missed any of the hype, and this character kind of represents the Superman of the Marvel Universe in some ways, and makes me wonder if they really need anybody else now.
Yeah.
And so it's a strange situation, this film, because I wanted it to be as good as the first one, and I just think the problem was that it maybe was, but that's not enough now.
Right.
Now they need to step it up. Quite frankly, I think the other Marvel films have started to fall short and have started getting weird in strange ways, and yet some of the ones I never expected to be good have started to become better, like Captain America and Thor. So that means the Avengers needs to evolve a little bit too. So for me, I give it a B+, just because, yeah, it was a well-made film, well-written. I like the cast and crew that's on it, but overall, they need more. The next Avengers need to step it up.
I think that's what you'll see. Yeah. I think they saw that coming, that the Avengers was kind of gonna curtail a little bit with the second one. That's why they're gonna start with the Civil War story arc, which is, for comic book readers, is a huge, huge Marvel Avengers story arc. So I think, you know, with the next Captain America, that's the start of it, and then the two Avengers to follow will follow that arc as well. Will kind of spice it up a little bit. Avengers is one of those movies that, you know, like you were saying, between the two of us, he goes to the theaters more.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go see the first Avengers in the theater.
Mm.
I did first see it on Blu-ray. I bought it the day it came out and watched it. And it's definitely a movie I regret not going to the theater to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, personally, based on the feedback I've seen and, you know, not the A-pluses or A's that Avengers got when it came out,
mm-hmm.
I'm definitely going to see it before it leaves the theaters this time. So
yeah,
I will be seeing Age of Ultron in the theaters.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you a show of how I watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rarely will I go see a movie release weekend.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not a big fan of crowds. I don't mind crowds. Usually takes a special event.
Yeah.
To get me to go out to a movie's release date. Like,
and that's okay.
Yeah. Like, I've seen the first four Harry Potter films in the theater on the day it released because.
Oh.
I have somebody in my family who's a huge fan of the series.
Yep.
I never saw the last three because
mm-hmm.
she saw them by herself, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, so be it. I've now seen the last two Hunger Games movies in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who loves the Hunger Games, and
mm-hmm.
her birthday just happens to be right around the time they released those in November. So, you know, definitely movies that I'm glad I saw them in the theater because they belong on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how good your system is at home, you know, if you have a 65-inch or a 27-inch or, you know, great sound, surround sound or not, nothing beats being in the theater, especially with, like, the feeling of the people around you.
Of course.
Like, feeding off the crowd is, for me, I love live sporting events.
Yeah.
I've been to a few concerts, but seeing a movie in the theater with people usually can make the movie better.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll actually think a movie's better than it is.
Yeah.
Just based on crowd reaction.
Or think it's worse. I've been to movies before where I've thought, you know, we talked about the Pirates movies before we started recording today and the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I'm not a fan. And I remember going to see the second one and thinking, like, man, people are not laughing at these jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see why, because I didn't feel they were funny either, but I would find that when there was something to laugh at, I might be the only one in there. And I'm not really a huge fan, like I said, so I was even surprised because people seem to love these. They spend so much money on them. But at the end of the day, sometimes people just go see movies because it's escape. They went and saw Kevin Hart doing, what is that movie, Paul Blart, Mall Cop. Not Kevin Hart.
Oh, no, not Kevin.
James...
Kevin James.
Kevin James.
Yeah, yeah.
Grandma helped out on that one. Okay, Kevin James. We went and saw... You know, people went and saw that. I can't tell me that was a good movie. I'm not going to see that.
No. It was
no.
Sorry, no.
And so, I don't... You know, people
it
go see
enough
movies
money
to escape.
Made a sequel.
Exactly. Which
Why?
I don't think made any money.
Why?
But that's the way it is sometimes. And for me, I want to be careful to say that a B+ is a fine film. There are some great B-range films out there that I would recommend that other people watch in specific situations, and a B+ film for me, like The Avengers, that's a perfect example. As I talk about it, it just crossed $900 million worldwide. It's simply a juggernaut, considering that it's been out since May 1st, mm-hmm. right? That's huge. And so I know people are going to see it. They'll go see sequels. The effort is there. It's a great summer movie, but still a B plus for me.
We'll keep numbers up to date a little bit. As of June 1st, which is the beginning of this movie month, or movie week, I should say, mm-hmm. it's at 1,322,000,000.
So maybe it was 900.
That was probably before this last weekend.
Okay.
Because it probably opened in a couple more markets, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. you know, foreign markets get movies later, or mm-hmm. sometimes even before us, but...
Yeah, I want to say it's like...
But it's now at 894 million foreign gains. So it's crouching all-time numbers type there.
And it's currently, as far as not adjusted for inflation, it's number 6 on the all-time worldwide grosses.
No.
Number 6, and it's a sequel to the movie that's number 3. It's so weird.
Yeah.
But imagine, someday there'll be movies that are bigger than those movies.
Yeah.
There'll be movies that make those movies look like Star Wars, which are still massive. They're still in the top 10, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
But they're not what they were, you know. So anyways, moving on, the next movie that I've actually already seen this summer was Mad Max Fury Road, and so far that's got my winning prize for the summer. Mm-hmm. It's a really fascinating film, and really just such a... I don't remember watching the others when I was a kid, and ever since this has been coming out, I've been told by a number of people not to, because they're just not that good. They don't hold up, or they're not, you know, they never were, you know, they're just different. And to see that George Miller went off and directed kids' movies for years, and directed one of my favorite movies, Witches of Eastwick. Thank you, George Miller. That was an excellent film. Mm-hmm. But then he directed, like, Babe and Happy Feet, one and two.
Pig.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So the guy has done some interesting things, and to see what he did with this movie, I mean, the special effects are just, they're seamless, first of all. The desert backdrops and all that stuff, it's great. And then... great characters and great, you know, the vehicles are just ridiculous. It's just simply an over-the-top chase movie,
right. But
super entertaining and super intense and suspenseful. Highly, highly recommend it. I would say it's an A- for me, and I don't know how Chris feels about going to see it.
I'm going to go see it. Everything I've heard, I mean, beyond Ray, you know, people, friends and... reviews and whatnot. It's definitely going to be a movie I'll see in the theaters. Next film on the list is Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see how they were going to turn a land at Disneyland into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
They did somehow,
mm-hmm.
and it fell short.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it, and honestly, that's a movie where I at first was not waiting for feedback. I was just going to go see it. I was looking forward to it. I'd seen the previews. I love Brad Bird as a director. Incredibles is probably my favorite Pixar movie. And, you know, he's also done the last Mission Impossible movie, which I thought was a great step into live action. And I just thought, I wonder what they're going to do with this. And when I started seeing previews, I thought it looked, you know, special effects were going to be top-notch. And whatever happened, it's hard to make outer space movies, I guess. There's only so far people will go. They love movies like Gravity, where people aren't that far away. As soon as you start getting, like, Mars and shit, people just don't go to the theaters for that anymore, you know?
The Ghost of Mars with Ice Cube?
Yeah, Mission to Mars, The Red Planet. Yeah. Name me a fucking Mars movie that people have seen since Total Recall. You know what I mean? And so it seems like the farther we go out, the less interest there is in some ways or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so Tomorrowland, I thought it was going to be interesting, and the response has just come back completely flat. And I've read a lot of just bad reviews on it. And so, for me, I'm kind of at the point where, you know, I don't go see as many movies as I used to. So I'm going to say that, you know, I'm curious to go see it. I just don't see myself going to see it.
This is, for me, it's probably going to be a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
It, probably not one I'll buy.
Mm-hmm.
But to reiterate, or I guess to kind of clarify for me, if I see a movie and I like it, I might go out and buy it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, there's certain movies I've seen on HBO or Showtime, which I don't have now, but or if I see it on Netflix now and I like it,
mm-hmm.
I will, you know, go out and buy the Blu-ray or the DVD, because, you know, movies don't always stay on Netflix. They take down movies all the time.
Oh, I hate that shit.
You know, so, you know, they don't keep the movies you love up there at all times.
Yeah.
So,
The day you figured that out, too, I remember I was like, oh, I don't have to buy DVDs anymore. Cool. Yeah. I can get rid of these DVDs and they're on Netflix. All right. And then you go, like, trade in half your shit at a warehouse, which I don't even have anymore. Come to find out, oh, Netflix doesn't have that anymore? What?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, you know, hold on to those DVDs and Blu-rays. You know, I've got tons of stuff I've looked for on Netflix or even Hulu. And between the two of them, you still can't find it. And you're boggled. Like, I took a film class, you know, a little over a year ago, and he said, you know, just check Netflix and Hulu for him. You know, you don't have to, because it was online, so we weren't watching them in class. And half the films weren't on either one. So, you know, I was forced to go out and buy some of them or go to campus and watch them. So there are certain films that, you know, will not be on either platform, or you know, even some of the more rare ones like Crackle, or I can't even think of the other ones off the top of my head. But so if I love a movie that I've seen on Netflix or through any other form, you know, I might go back and repurchase it just so I can have the ability to watch it whenever I want.
And yeah, I go on Amazon and I'll pick up a DVD that something that I know I'll watch. If it's on Amazon and it's like $5, and I get free shipping for Prime, or if I get, you know, whatever, it is $3 for shipping. I figure if it's a movie I'm going to watch again more than once, and I kind of feel that way, I'll buy it, because
it's worth it.
It's worth it, because you don't want to be in that situation. You're like, oh, man. You know, you're hanging out with somebody, and you're like, oh, you should see this movie, and they've never seen it, and they're excited about it, and then they don't fucking have it. And you're like, no.
Yeah.
I've chased movies around to store after store trying to find some shit, and it's just so frustrating. So even though I don't buy as many DVDs as I used to, it's still nice to have them around.
Yeah. So Tomorrowland could end up being that way, you know, because there's a lot of movies that are critically panned and critics hate it, and then, you know, the average consumer loves it. I mean, there's, you know, we talked earlier, not earlier in the show, but between me and Ray, that there are some movies that are critic proof.
Yeah.
That no matter how much the critics hate it and downgrade it, people are gonna go see it. Like, there's just certain movies that the public just love to see. But moving on to movies that released this last weekend, we have San Andreas was the big one, which...
Hey, literally.
It was the big one. I've loved the Rockin' movies. I'm glad he left, or all. He goes back and forth with the WWE, but I just love his personality. He just seems so, you know, upbeat and positive, and just... I'm glad to see that. I will go see this movie, you know, just to support his movie career.
Right.
You know, I know that... You know, he's kind of had a revival with, you know, the Furious movies, and that kind of brought him back. You know, even he had a couple failures with Doom, which was pretty terrible.
Was it? Oh, it
was pretty bad. I am a huge video game. You'll find out throughout these podcasts. I love video games. I play a lot of video games, and you know, I grew up obviously in the 80s and 90s. I played Doom. I played, you know, the original Wolfenstein's, and the Doom movie was pretty terrible. But you know, he had a couple bombs. He did the Tooth Fairy, which was pretty bad as well. I'm a hockey player as well. I'm missing teeth. I have a couple fake front teeth, and that movie was pretty abysmal as well. Glad to see that his career is not gone down the cliff and not coming back. Like it's definitely on an uptrend with the Furious movies, because they've already announced Furious 8.
Of course. You
know. Yeah, those movies just print money. You know, they're not going away.
I'm just
going
to say it. Paul Walker's death was not a significant blow to this franchise. It doesn't mean, you know, had Paul Walker, Vin Diesel, and somebody else from the movies died in a car crash. Yeah, and if they had all died together, then of course that would change the face of that series, but Paul Walker was part of that series, and there's a reason why they have ensemble casts in movies like this, you know? I mean, if you lose one star, you replace him with another big name, hopefully, or whatever it is you got to do to spice it up, and you keep it rolling. That's going to be a series that I won't be surprised if that's the first movie, like action movie series to go over 10 in a consecutive, you know, not like James Bond or anything like that. Just they're going to be on forever because people are going to be like, oh, let's go see a car movie. Always. Yep. You know, so
no one else is filling that void, and they're filling it, and people are enjoying it.
They are filling it deep. All right, so San Andreas, for me, it's already out. I'm going to tell you right now, I am a sucker for disaster films. I don't know what it is. I know
that Volcano?
Okay, now, I will say, Some of them aren't great. Okay. I'm not a fan. And there was a time where they had dueling. Now I'll tell you this. That's what's interesting about disaster films. There aren't a ton of them, but for the ones there are, there's times where there's duels. So there's like
the two asteroid
volcano
movies.
Yeah. Versus Deep Impact.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. Volcano versus Dante's Peak.
Dante's Peak, yeah.
Volcano, I finally saw it years later. Ugh. I didn't like that movie at all.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Dante's Peak, I fucking love that movie. I love it. I know.
That's Chris Brosnan, right?
People are going to hate on me. That's an A-plus movie for me. This is where a bunch of people stop listening to the podcast right now. All right? But that's what I'm saying about the personal value of an A-plus movie is that for me, Dante's Peak is like just the right kind of like, ooh, there's a mystery and they're going to solve it. Oh, he's so sure and he knows. Oh, look at the signs. Oh, there's boiling acid in the hot springs. And I love how disaster movies unfold. I love the little pea under the mattress that keeps the princess up and turns her into a raging, bubbling earth. You know, like, so for me, seeing mass scale, not just destruction, but change, I love the creativity they have to make these disaster films happen. And I love that we can think beyond and think about what it would literally look like if the California just cracked off into the ocean, you know? That's not just some joke fantasy conversation we had in the 90s. Now we can go see what it looks like, you know?
Right.
And so I'm stoked about San Andreas. I'm not going to tell you it's going to be an A-plus movie, because to be honest with you, I prefer disaster movies that have a lot more different kinds of disasters in them. I saw Into the Storm a while back on HBO, and I don't know, man. Just twisters, that's not enough for me. I need like twisters, an earthquake, hurricane, and fire and lava.
So 2012 was the epitome of the disaster movie.
2012 is pretty amazing. I'm going to say that if I had to pick some of my favorites, it would be 2012, Day After Tomorrow. I fucking love Day After Tomorrow too. Dante's Peak.
So the dueling meteor movies were Armageddon.
Oh, and Deep Impact. Yes.
And Deep Impact. Those are the
two. For Deep Impact, I think it was more character driven. It was more cheesy in parts, but that's not true because Armageddon. Michael Bay just hardly ever directs a decent film, in my opinion, and Armageddon just was too. I know a lot of people like it, but it's too weird for me. I just didn't care for it. Deep Impact, I liked. I like Robert Duvall. What the fuck? Anyways, and then for me, The Core. I know it gets bagged a lot. I think NASA came out with some list of like the worst science movies ever, which I don't really understand why NASA is rating movies about geology. But anyways, The Core is about how like the Earth's core stops moving at some point. I know it's probably complete bullshit, but I'll tell you this right now. I saw The Core, and then I took a physical science class in college where we had to learn about different things like geology, and it was really weird because that guy taught me a lot of stuff that I already learned watching The Core. So I don't understand how it's so, like, not
science is so
true,
bad.
But it's super entertaining for me. So anyways, I do love disaster films. So I am looking forward to San Andreas. I'm pumped about it. I'm probably going to go see it next week. But after that, I'm not really looking forward to the next movie on the list is Entourage. I've never really watched the show. I've seen it bits and pieces over the years, and it's not that I didn't like it. I just never got into it.
I think it's one of those movies. We'll just touch briefly on it. If you watch the show, you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. Tons of cameos. We went over some of the people in the movie. If you watch some of the trailers, they literally just list the cameos of the people. I think if you love the show, you'll love the movie. Both of us never really watched the show, so if you like the show, go watch the movie.
Yeah, be pumped about it. Now, the next movie coming out, I am super pumped about, and I've been on what do you call it? Media blackout. What do you call it? Sequestering myself from seeing previews anymore, because I can't stand it when I really am looking forward to a movie and I see a bunch of previews that just blow too much cool shit. I want to be surprised and be into it the first time I see it. And I started to see some pretty cool-looking special effects angles that I definitely want to wait for the movie. Jurassic World. I gotta say, after how many years since Jurassic Park 3 came out? That was 2000 and probably 2002, I'm gonna say. Let's look.
Rampaging through San Diego, where we currently are recording.
Well, that was three. That was two.
Oh, three was the one that went back with
Jurassic Park 3 came out in 2001.
Went back to the other island. Yeah.
2001 was Jurassic Park 3. Jurassic Park The Lost World was 97, and So, it's been a while.
You know, you can go back and watch the original. It holds up because there's a lot of practical special effects.
I
mean,
it does hold up. I was never a huge fan of the second one. I still watch it, but I prefer the first one, and I like the third one. I'm a geek.
Yeah, the second one was... Yeah, the third one actually was okay.
Yeah.
The second one was pretty bad.
Yeah, and Joe Johnston, as long as he's got a good special effects team, he'll be all right. Unfortunately, as director, he made Jumanji, which I like Jumanji, but the special effects were kind of horrible. The animal effects and everything, but he also made the first Captain America film, and you know, so he does well with special effects as long as he's got a good team behind him, and otherwise he tells a good story.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see Jurassic World following directors. This is the same director that did, I want to say he's the same director that did Monsters, but let me look that up real quick on IMDb.
Colin Trevorrow.
Oh no, he did a film called Safety Not Include Not No, Safety Not
Guaranteed.
That is an excellent film. For me, I haven't watched it again, but I think that was an A the first time I saw it.
Hmm.
And if I could watch it again and feel as passionately and, you know, add it to that inherently rewatchability list, Safety Not Guaranteed is an excellent film. It's about a guy played by Mark Duplass who posts an ad that says wanted someone to go back in time with me. This is not a joke. You'll get gold after we get back. Must bring your own weapons. I have only done this once before. Safety not guaranteed. And
not required to bring a towel.
Yeah, it was one of the kind of goofy but really endearing film. It was just a well made film. But an obviously independent film, and it was quirky, and it was cute, and it had, you know, a good story, good ending, everything like that. And somehow, they looked at this guy and said, we like that movie enough that we're going to put him in charge of this billion-dollar franchise, essentially. Or what I'm assuming is a billion-dollar franchise. So, I'm interested to see what he do, because, you know, Spielberg must have a lot of faith in him.
Mm-hmm.
He's part of this. So the special effects look pretty intense, and it looks like they've thought the story through more than I would have expected had they continued this, you know, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I am looking forward to that one. And then next on the list is the newest Pixar movie, Inside Out, that comes out in June. I gotta say, at first I wasn't really all that sure what to think about it, and then I started reading some reviews from Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
The Cannes Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I say Cannes. I started reading some reviews from that, and it was like this movie that makes people laugh and cry and laugh and cry, and
mm-hmm.
it's like life changing and life affirming. And I don't know. I don't know if it's gonna be that way, but now I'm pretty damn curious to see if that's the case. I really thought that WALL-E was like their creative pinnacle in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But they've made great films since then. I even liked Monsters University a lot. I was really charmed by it. I don't know why they keep making Cars movies. They need to knock that shit off.
Yeah,
there's
so
many.
Sell.
Oh, God, they need to stop selling.
Well,
kids should stop watching them. Stop, kids.
I have a young nephew, and he loves Cars.
Oh.
He buys all the crap. And I honestly have seen both movies so many times. They're crap.
I'm just going to say this. Every other Pixar movie makes sense to me. I hate to be so human-centric here, but it makes sense to me that there's a world where toys could live because there's humans to play with them. It makes sense to me, that there's a world where superheroes could be hiding because there's humans to defend, you know, them from, or blah, blah, blah. But Cars make, like, even a world where there's monsters makes sense.
Right. In your dreams and in the closet.
Even if it has nothing to do with humans, even if it's still, you know, Monsters University, it's... But having cars in a world where there are no humans...
Right.
Just never made any fucking sense to me. That's just rude to children.
Yeah.
Why do you have a... Route 66 closed down? Well, why?
They're
cars. They didn't want to drive there anymore. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's so weird. So I always had a problem with that. I guess I'm an asshole. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, getting back to Inside Out, the voices they picked for the different emotions that inside the head are just you know, makes so much sense. Amy Poehler, Bill Hader, mm-hmm. Lewis Black, mm-hmm. you know, Mindy Kaling. I mean, Phyllis Smith, Diane Lane. I mean, just they seem to pick the perfect.
Yeah.
I don't want to say pigeonhole the actors, but I mean, Lewis Black as Anger is just.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's just the old angry.
Who else
guy.
Would
I mean,
you think of? Yeah.
You know, it's awesome. Amy Poehler is mm-hmm. happy. It's just, you know, they definitely hit the mark with. You know, the actors they chose to play these voices. And I, most of these movies I've tried to stay away from. I went and watched the trailers just to kind of get a little bit of feel for these movies. And just from what I've seen, it'll be another great Pixar film.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
it'll be up there. But,
yeah.
you know, if the trailer is any indication of the rest of the film, it's going to be one of the top Pixar
yeah.
movies ever made.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Inside Out?
No, I guess I'm looking forward to it. And,
yeah.
You know, we'll see what the feedback already seems pretty good from what I've,
yeah.
What I've read.
I have
so
two
far.
Young nephews. I'll probably take them to that.
Yeah.
The last movie I actually saw in the theater was Home,
mm.
which, you know, I took my nephews to. So a lot of the movies I'll see over the summer will kind of be kid movies just so I can take them to them. Like, you know,
yeah.
talking about Inside Out, I'll probably take them to that.
Well,
a couple
like
more
better.
Movies.
I mean, I'll tell you, let me just tell you real quick that the, so it's not even out yet, right? The Metacritic is 89, which is huge.
That's pretty big.
That's based based on 9 Metacritic reviews, but the fan rating is a 9.1 on IMDb. That's pretty massive.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Usually
that'll probably
a lot
go
of
down.
Negative people with
yeah.
users.
It'll drop down probably into the high 8s or mid 8s, I would say, but that's huge. That's a really good rating for a film.
Yeah.
Especially when it's consistent with the critics. So, anyways,
yeah.
moving on.
All right, next film in the summer calendar, we have, I mean, we're talking big movies. We're not going over every movie.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ted 2. I'm going to say no interest at all.
Yeah.
Didn't see the first one.
Yeah.
Don't really watch Family Guy. I don't really find Seth MacFarlane very funny. That's a personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, A Million Ways to Die in the West was awful.
Hey,
just
Grandma,
no interest.
What did you think of Million Ways to Die in the West?
I liked it.
She loved it. So he doesn't pass the grandma test. She does.
Oh!
And I will say...
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say I am a fan of Family Guy. I watched Family Guy for a long time. I really liked Family Guy for a long time. And although I don't really watch it anymore, I still think fondly of it. I like American Dad at some level. I don't have much fondness for it, but it's interesting to watch sometimes. I didn't like Ted. I saw it hoping it would be good. I got mega stoned thinking this is the perfect movie to get mega stoned and go and see. And when I went and saw it, I felt like I sat through like what felt like 2.5 hours built around the funniest parts I saw in the previews. And I hate that shit because the previews just saturated my television at the time. I don't remember. I don't watch a lot of TV now, so I don't know why I saw so much of it then. But I saw so many.
Because it was on all
oh,
the time.
Oh, God. I saw so many previews,
yeah.
and it looked funny. And I thought this would be great because I was dying laughing in the theaters. That was one of the funniest previews I've ever seen. And then I just feel like from then it didn't continue on that way.
Right.
So. So I just don't have any interest. That's one category we didn't mention. We won't go see certain movies.
Yeah.
Another
it's
one
a,
of those.
I mean, the story's... This podcast is a little different because we're hitting a bunch of movies in a row just because we're doing the summer preview. So,
yeah.
You know, next episode we'll do a little bit different because we'll just hit
yeah.
movies that are... We'll go a little bit more in-depth on the movies coming out around that two-week mark.
We're going to go deep. So, yeah.
Balls.
Balls. So, another movie that I'm not interested in seeing yet is Terminator Genesis. I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm curious at some level, but I'm going to see what the response is. And if I don't see a positive response from both film critics and fans, I don't know if I really want to go see it. The Terminator Salvation just kind of burst my bubble. I don't know why they ever let McGee direct a movie and... why they made Christian Bale so crazy. But it was a bad experience for me, and I don't want to relive that, so...
The only thing, I watched the trailer, and in my notes, I literally just put a bunch of question marks. Because supposedly the rumors are that they're pretty much saying Terminator Salvation just does not exist in the pantheon of the movies.
Oh, interesting.
So if they're throwing out that movie as far as like the story arc and the lore of the world,
okay,
it could redeem itself, mm-hmm. but it's probably not a movie I would see in the theaters. It might be a Netflix to DVD purchase
for
me.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would.
We'll just have to see.
Yeah, I think that's a wait and see.
It definitely is, because if it does get a good response, and I just don't see how much Schwarzenegger could be a part of it, and yet he's listed as the star. Yeah. And I know he's a star because without him, there wasn't a Terminator franchise. You know, I mean, it's right. like, unless maybe they would have had an older Keanu Reeves to work with. There's just nobody that was as robotic as he was, you know? And,
yeah.
and it was perfect with the accent. This Alan Taylor, let's look at what he's directed here. And we'll see why this might be significant. Oh, okay. He directed, actually, well, maybe he didn't direct this, but it says, no, he didn't direct Thor the Dark World, did he? Yes, he did. He directed Thor the Dark World, which is a sequel, and I will say that I actually prefer that one to the first one. But we'll talk about that more next week. He's done a lot of TV directing, but more serious TV, like Rome, 6 Feet Under, Homicide, Life on the Street. And it looks like he also was part of a film that I really love called The Emperor's New Groove. Or not Emperor's New Groove, Emperor's New Clothes. About Napoleon. But anyways,
I was gonna say the Disney movie.
No, that's great,
with the
though.
Dancing llama.
I tried to get my girlfriend to watch that the other night. She wouldn't do it. I love that. That was actually one that I was surprised I grew to love, because I was an adult when I saw it.
Okay.
But anyways, he's so maybe he'll pull it off. Maybe he looks a little more like he can harness a big film. So maybe, I don't know.
Dark World was good. So
if
he continues,
yeah.
If they throw out the lore of Salvation, I think they could salvage the film.
Right.
And it was
salvage it.
And watching the trailer, obviously, you know, we don't get pre-screeners or anything.
Right.
We're just two guys watching movies.
Yeah.
Seeing young Arnold was weird.
It is weird.
You
it's
know,
weird in a way that's too reminiscent of the third, or of Salvation, of Terminator Salvation for me. Because that whole scene where he fights the young him in the factory at the end was kind of too weird for me.
Yeah.
And so I don't really want them to revisit that, and too late, they already have.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely a wait and see.
Yeah.
Now, moving on, we have Minions, which I've seen the Despicable Me movies because of my nephews, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Love them. Think the Minions are probably the best part of those movies. I have 3 ringtones on my phone that are of the Minions.
So is my
mom. Mostly because I have to keep my ringtones PC around my nephews, but they're also funny.
Yeah.
So they're taking the best part of those movies. Steve Carell's great, you know, no discount to him, but the Minions are hilarious in those movies.
Right.
Giving them their own movie, we'll see. It's probably going to be, obviously I have young nephews, so it's probably going to be a movie I'm going to go see in the theater just because I'm going to take them to it and they're going to be excited about it. So.
Yeah. You know, and there's also the possibility, I mean, I'm not really a fan of the Despicable Me movies myself, and that's just a personal thing, it didn't interest me, and I hate to be a snob, but I tend to stick with Pixar when it comes to animated films. I'll say, like, Monsters and Aliens, I actually really liked. I grew to like that one a
DreamWorks,
lot.
DreamWorks, yeah.
So I like some DreamWorks stuff. I'm not really a fan of the How to Train My Dragon shit, and I don't know. And not Pixar's not always perfect. I mean, I'll say that Brave was okay, but overall, not something that I'm like, hey, Pixar, you're so amazing.
See, that's one I fight for. Like, Brave yeah. Because I've heard a lot of people that say they didn't like Brave. And that could be because I'm Irish and, you know, that whole range and I have my own tartan and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a personal thing. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
definitely think it was better than people. It definitely was not as successful as they thought it was going to be.
I would say it was a B+ for me.
Okay.
And
worth seeing, but
at some point, we'll have a Pixar discussion.
That could be an entire weeks
could,
of podcast.
Yeah. But anyways, I understand what they're doing with Minions. They're taking it's like they're taking cluster cereal, you know, with the squirrel on the box, and it's like all those, it's like almost like bran flakes mixed with like these clusters of nuts and honey and whatever. Now you know what I'm talking about. Okay.
No, I don't.
I'm trying to think of another analogy, but it's like...
Oh, okay, wait. Well, if you want to go with cereal, you can talk about Captain Crunch. My nephew's bought a cereal. It's all berries.
All berries, exactly.
They took out...
This is what
they
I'm
took
about.
Out...
The Crunch.
The Crunch, and
so
just had the berries.
Yep.
So that's...
No, it's not Captain Crunch berries. It's just Captain Crunch.
It's all berries.
Berries,
yeah.
That's it. And so, I see what they're doing with Minions. And it'll be interesting to see if they can pull off a whole movie with it. And it would be interesting to see if it's something that I would want to see, because I don't really care for the Gru character all that much. So, I don't know.
But, well, I mean, the main villain is voiced by Sandra Bullock in this one. She's the voice that the Minion's going to work for. So, the trailer I have seen, she plays it pretty well. You know, usually think of her as America's sweetheart, but...
Yeah, but she's a villain in this one.
She's the... You know, obviously the... Just to briefly touch the story, the Minions are looking for someone to work for.
Okay.
And they go to a Minion convention, or a villain convention, to find their villain to work for. And they end up working for Sandra Bullock. I'm not spoiling anything, because that's in the trailer. So if you've seen the trailer, you've seen that, at least. I like Sandra Bullock, obviously. John Hamm's another voice in it. Michael Keaton's a voice in it. So they've got some good voices, so we'll see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'll see it. I'll give you what I thought about it, just because I will end up taking my nephews to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna wait on that one.
Yeah, but next on the list we have Ant-Man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one.
Now,
I wasn't.
I'm definitely not that huge of a comic book guy.
No.
Like, I, real brief, bought 1 through 100 of Spawn, love Spawn. Obviously, kid of the 90s, Image Comics, those kind of things. Didn't really get into the whole X-Men... Marvel DC thing. I have gone to Comic-Con every year since 96, I think it is. So while I love, you know, Comic-Con as an event, didn't know anything about Ant-Man, never knew anything about it. Mm-hmm. But upon seeing the trailer, I would say it definitely falls in the curious realm for me. Like, I'm gonna probably wait and see what people say, what critics say. But
yeah, if it comes back bad, if the response is not good, then I mean, you know, pretty early. You know, people go see early previews. It's not some movie I would go see a preview for.
Yeah.
So you're gonna know pretty quick whether it's getting a good response.
I like Paul Rudd.
Mm-hmm.
I like Michael Douglas. Mm-hmm. So it's got potential. So for me, it's definitely a wait and see.
Yeah.
Kind of go real quick, Mr. Holmes, which I don't know much about, but you add to the list. We have it's based on an older Sherlock Holmes. And
it's like
him revisiting a case, you said, that he couldn't solve when he was young, so he's trying to solve it when he was later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a revisiting. And Ian McKellen's in it, and it's a perfect role for him, because he's aging now.
Right.
He's getting older, you know.
Love
so
Ian McKellen.
Sense. Yeah, he's
great. Sir Ian McKellen.
But the last X-Men that I saw, the Days of Future Past, that's going to probably be the last one I'm going to be able to see him in, I feel like, because he's getting too old. You know, I mean, I hate to sort of put someone out to pasture like that, but I think he also knows that. In this last one that he was in, him and Patrick Stewart both, even though they look great for their respective ages, they're simply getting too physically... when you go back and you see the first X-Men movie that he was in, holy wowzers, it's like a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. He is so much younger, and so, you know, and obviously he's been running for a long time. He's been a very successful part of them. So, but it's interesting to see him now adopting this role where he really does look considerably older.
Right.
Playing Sherlock Holmes, it makes sense. It's a great return to the character. Mm-hmm. I don't think Robert Downey Jr. can really make many more of those. So we'll see. Anyways, moving on from there, Pixels, the new Adam Sandler movie. I don't know.
Well, it was based on a short film that a French gentleman did. It was a brilliant short film. Loved the short film. Mm-hmm. But turning it into a full-length feature with... And in the short film, there's no humans. It's just a an art piece, so to speak. It's all pixels and these characters from the 80s of video games coming back to life, Pac-Man and Space Invaders. And the fact that they turned it into a full-length feature film, I don't know if it's a paycheck for Adam Sandler, considering he has, you know, a certain amount of picture deal with Sony, but, you know, I don't have much hope for it. Short film I loved. I highly recommend you search it out. It's on YouTube. Just look up Pixels on YouTube. It's a brilliant short film. As far as a full-length feature film, it's probably definitely going to be a Netflix film for me. Just because I love the short so much, I'll definitely end up seeing it. I doubt I will want to pay money to go see it. I mean, outside of my monthly Netflix fee. But, probably definitely not going to go see it in the theater. Next on our list is Southpaw, which is a Jake Gyllenhaal film, which he becomes a boxer.
Yes.
Which... you know, we kind of...
I don't know a whole lot about it.
we both... we kind of thought this was a Oscar kind of time frame movie. He definitely had a body transformation. You go look at just go look at stills of the movie, and he looks yoked. I mean, he was big. He's bulked up. He's completely cut.
Right.
And considering Nightcrawler came out just a few months ago, and he looks completely different body style. He definitely, you know, changes his. He definitely threw himself into this character, changing his body. I mean, you know, he went from Prince of Persia, which he was very yoked for, but that was obviously a long time ago. But he definitely adapts to his role, and interesting to see.
Yes, I agree. And you know, he it's such a drastic transformation. I mean, really is such a dramatic thing to see these pictures of him. He's been big in movies before, but he just looks so intense in this film. It's an Antoine Fuqua film. He's been hit or miss, but overall, I liked Shooter. I think Shooter, for me, is a film I could watch over and over again. It's just a simple action film, but it's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Good special effects and fun action sequences. And then, you know, Training Day is a classic. He's made some not great films, too, but this might have legs on it. I don't know. I really like The Fighter, and that's been enough boxing movies for me for a while, so we'll see if this is, draws attention. Moving up into July, we've got Vacation, the reboot, or not even the reboot, it's actually the continuation of the National Lampoon's Family series.
Mm-hmm.
Family Vacation and...
Vegas.
Yep.
Christmas Vacation,
mm-hmm.
European Vacation.
Yep. Chevy Chase, I just found out today, Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo are in it. I didn't realize they're kind of passing the torch off to,
Chris Hemsworth.
Ed Helms, and then Chris Hemsworth is in it. But Ed Helms plays Rusty, now grown up with a family of his own going on vacation, I guess. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, they didn't bring back Anthony Michael Hall.
No. That didn't work out. Awkward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, Vegas Vacation.
Yeah.
It was Ethan Embry.
Yes! He was in Can't Hardly Wait.
Can't Hardly Wait. Yeah, that's the other one. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Anyways. 90s chills.
Nostalgia.
Okay, moving on. Vacation, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if the response is good. It might be a good stoner film if it's pretty funny. We'll have to see about that.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. The last really big tentpole movie of the movie for a year for me is going to be Mission Impossible 5. It's called Rogue Nation. I don't know how many more of these they can make where basically the whole world turns against them. So we'll see how this one turns out. I don't know. Tom Cruise, you know, people are going to want to say, oh, he's getting too old for this shit. I'm not convinced of that.
He's got that Scientology.
He's going to live forever.
He'll
be
100
fine.
And look 45 still.
And Rogue Nation, you know, they thought he was going to pass the torch to Jeremy Rayner in the last one, and then he decided not to. But what's interesting about this film is that it's the return of the director Christopher McQuarrie, who just recently had more success with Tom Cruise directing Jack Reacher. He tried to get into directing. He wrote The Usual Suspects back in the day. He tried to get into directing more when he did The Way of the Gun, and that kind of flopped.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had Chris Philippi.
Ryan Philippi.
Ryan
Philippi. Can't even remember his name.
Yeah, he's terrible. Only good movie?
Huh.
I can't even remember the name
of it.
No,
it doesn't. Crash.
Not Crash. Huh. Before that, Cruel Intentions.
Oh, I didn't like that movie either.
It was his only good movie.
Well, so Christopher McQuarrie came back and directed Jack Reacher. I was just watching it again the other night. I think it's just a fun, you know, action film to watch or whatever, clever.
It was a surprise hit.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what he does with the new Mission Impossible. I'm sure the special effects will be great and everything like that. So, wrapping it up for me is going to be August. It might be a sleeper month. We'll see.
You got a couple films in August that look hit or miss. Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Just watch the trailer. Mm-hmm. Keep going back to trailers. Doctor Doom looks great.
Okay, I don't think I've seen a trailer.
Briefly,
with...
I mean, it's just like he literally just turns around and you see his face.
Okay.
I like that they cast different people for the roles.
Yeah. Younger.
Yeah, it's
now,
definitely...
I want to say that kid, Miles Teller, that plays Reed Richards, he's the guy from Whiplash.
He is, yeah. He's the kid from,
And,
I was going to bring that up earlier, but we moved on really quick.
Yeah,
so.
I wonder if he's almost too young, but either way.
Well, if they're starting it out with an origin story again, which is what they're doing, it makes sense to start young to bring them you know, through a few years of growing it, the Human Torch is Michael B. Jordan. You know, younger actor.
Right.
The Thing, he can be young, he can be old, just because he's mostly going to be CGI once the fact that he gets transformed.
And I don't know how I feel about that, because I got to say, one thing I liked about the other Fantastic Four movies was that The Thing was pretty good looking, realistic looking.
Yeah.
The images I've seen of this one, I don't think he looks that realistic, and I don't really care for that.
Yeah, that's a little...
But, you know, here's my thing. This film was directed by the same young director that did Chronicle. And I think Chronicle, did you ever see that? The kids who develop special power, like they develop superpowers essentially.
Mm-mm.
And there's three friends, they go off and they find this nuclear, something landed, of course. They go off, they find it, and it changes them somehow, and they become essentially superheroes.
No, I've not seen it.
One of them becomes bad, while the other ones are not. And so it shows how it accentuates their sort of predominant qualities. So, but they were actually... I thought it was an excellent film. One of the best superhero films I've ever seen. It was all found footage style and just really well made. Apparently, this director has some issues in making this film, and I think he almost got fired. So, you know, I'm not sure that it's going to be much to see. It looks a little dark, like a little too dark from the poster that I'm looking at right now. The preview hasn't given enough away for me, so I'm not sure. I'm really going to wait and see on this one.
Yeah.
And then that's the same is true for me for the last two films. Man from U.N.C.L.E., I didn't realize till today when I looked it up, it's the director return of Guy Ritchie, and he hasn't made a significant film since Sherlock Holmes 2, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
2011, Sherlock Holmes,
so Man from U.N.C.L.E. will be interesting to see if that's something. It's based on a TV show from back in the day. And then Straight Outta Compton. The story of NWA and their rise to prominence, and then downfall.
Yeah, which, for me, shocking. You know, complete the whitest guy you'll ever see in person. But grew up on rap music and hip-hop in the 90s. Grew up on NWA and Snoop Dogg and Ice-T, Ice Cube, all those guys. Dr. Dre, Eazy-E. And from what I've heard, they picked good characters, good actors to play the roles. I mean, Eazy-E's son, I believe, auditioned for his own father's role and didn't get it. So I probably won't go see it in the theater, but it's definitely a movie I will see. I don't know if that'll be Redbox or I'll buy it, but just being a child of that era, growing up in the 90s hip-hop/rap era, I'll definitely want to see it. It's definitely
not. It's got Paul Giamatti in it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's directed by F. Gary Gray, who did the Italian Job reboot with Mark Wahlberg.
Which was okay.
Yeah, I like it. It's a good little action flick. And then he also did The Negotiator. And he also did Law Abiding Citizen. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I have hopes for it.
Yeah.
Like I said, but it will be if I hear more positive stuff once it's released, closer towards August, I might go see it in the theater. Just like I said, because I want to support the artist.
Yeah.
Support the director, support the cast. I mean, these movies get made because of box office numbers.
Absolutely.
They don't, you know, Netflix doesn't like to release their numbers at all.
Mm-hmm.
Neither does Hulu. So, you know, like a director like, you know, say like Kevin Smith, who saw his career continue because he had DVD sales.
Right.
You know, DVD and Blu-ray sales are going by the wayside. You know, it's going the way of print.
Yeah, isn't that
it's
weird?
Dying.
My new car doesn't even have a CD player in it. Just doesn't. Yeah. It's not even an option.
Yeah.
That is a trip to me.
So, you know, going and seeing these films in the theater is one of the best ways to support, you know, these people. Which, you know, the hipster thing is not to support corporations and whatnot, but...
You're drunk.
To get these things made, you know, you have to support it in some way.
Absolutely. So we'll see. I'm gonna give August right now a tentative. I don't see anything coming out in August that makes it any that different from movies, and there's no Expendables movie this year to come out. So there's really nothing to hold August together. So we'll see. For me, this summer ends in July, but if any of those films coming out in August get really positive responses, I think we'd be good.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm rambling. Next week, if you tune in, not next week, next show.
Next show.
We're probably going to do a bi-weekly show format to start off.
We're going to try to do bi-weekly.
Yes. And so, anyways, next show we'll bring in some new segments. We're gonna talk in the Contrarian Corner, where we will each
on the popular opinion.
Yes, unpopular opinions. Yes, we will each come out with the movie that we really love or really hate, and talk about why that seems to be different from the popular opinion on that film.
Right.
And then we're also going to talk about desert island movies.
I'm excited about movies
you can watch over and over again. And, you know, we might have a few to talk about and give some perspective on movies you may have never seen or never heard of, especially from, like, the 80s, 90s and on. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to talk about the state of superhero moviedom. So, obviously, this summer, The Avengers Age of Ultron is, like, the big tentpole. We also got Fantastic Four going out. We have a lot of properties owned by different film companies, film production companies, whether it's Marvel, DC, whoever. And now Disney merging with Marvel and Pixar and blah, blah, and Lucasfilm. And it's like, how are we doing, though? So next show, we're going to talk about what it is that that Hollywood is doing with superheroes and whether that direction is still a positive one, and talk about some of our favorites and some of our least favorites over time. So tune in for that. We'll see you in a couple weeks. And that's all I got. I'm Redbeard.
I'm Stone.
And thanks for tuning in.